Good morning. I'm Matt Miller with this update of local and state news. Juno Douglas High School principal Ryan Alsup is resigning after 3 years in the job. Alsup will leave his post June 30th for what he says are personal reasons. He says it was a tough decision because he and his family enjoy living in the capital city. He does not yet have another job. Alsup moved to Juno from Colorado in 2010 when Juno Douglas High School was a larger school, but Thunder Mountain High School had just opened and budget cuts were looming. Alsup says he's seen a number of major changes.
We're roughly 200 kids smaller, but we're also roughly 25 staff members smaller as a result of budget cuts and things like that. So the bulk of my job has been to maintain, you know, a high-quality education as we go through the budget reduction processes that we've done every year since I've been here.
Alsup says the opening of a second high school in town is difficult for the existing school, but he has seen staff morale improve in the last 3 years.
I think when I started here, there was still kind of the feeling of loss amongst the staff as far as the things that, you know, they're afraid that they would lose with the opening of Thunder Mountain, and we've overcome that. So that's where I feel like we're in a better place. It isn't so much that our test scores are going to indicate that we're better off than we were or any tangible piece of evidence. It's just simply the overall feel of the school.
School district officials will meet with faculty and parents soon to talk about the search for a new principal. Alsup hopes his replacement will be hired before he leaves, which will help ease the transition. A crowd of teachers, students, and parents gathered in front of the Capitol steps yesterday to speak out for increased funding of education. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez has more on the story.
For many at the rally, the questions of lowering taxes on oil companies and adjusting education funding were inextricably intertwined. Kindergarten teacher Kayla Harmon waved a sign saying as much.
It says, big breaks for big oil, how about a little more for little Alaskans?
The per student funding amount has been held at the same level for 3 years now. And across Alaska, school districts are considering budget cuts. Anchorage has a shortfall of $25 million, while Juneau is facing a nearly $2 million gap. Protesters like Harmon express concern that state funding for education will stay stagnant at the same time that the legislature is advancing an oil tax overhaul that would cut state revenue by $800 million next year.
We talk a lot about our natural resources, and we really have to think long and hard that kids are our future, and if we want these jobs to stay inside our state, we need to educate our students to be prepared for those jobs.
Nearly a dozen Democratic legislators spoke at the rally, passing a bullhorn between them. They've introduced a bill that would tie the base student allocation to inflation, but it hasn't been scheduled for a hearing. Since the beginning of the legislative session, Republicans in the majority have said they're working on their own fix for education funding, but have been tight-lipped on details. In Juneau, I'm Alexandra Gutierrez.
The state senator who requested a study of women's issues in Alaska says she's shocked and disturbed by the results. Anchorage Republican Liesl McGuire says she plans to introduce a bill this session to reform the Alaska Women's Commission, which disbanded in 1988. The study released yesterday shows Alaska women still earn less than men, were imprisoned at a higher rate during the last decade, and are committing suicide at a rate twice the national average. McGuire says she would like the commission to bring in a range of backgrounds in finance, domestic violence issues, education, homelessness, even a homemaker to offer diverse opinions and solutions. The non-political group would then report back its findings and recommendations to the legislature. In market news this morning, the price of Brent crude oil this morning is $109.50 a barrel. West Texas Intermediate crude is at $96.07 a barrel, which is below a high set yesterday. Gold in New York spot market trading is up $6, currently at $1,605.50 an ounce. And zinc is down this morning, currently at 84 cents a pound. The Sitka herring fleet remains on two-hour notice today, waiting for the first opening of the 2013 season. Samples taken yesterday found a 10.7% mature roe content northwest of Beale Rock with a 3.1% immature roe. The average fish weight was 172 grams. Managers like to see a mature roe percentage of at least 10% before calling an opening. Vessel and aerial surveys are expected to continue today, as is test sampling. An opening could be called with as little as 2 hours advance notice in that lucrative fishery. Tuesday's snow has already delayed CBJ's water valve cleanup, according to Water Utilities Superintendent Dave Crabtree.
A little bit of ice on the road, that doesn't help us find the valve boxes very easily.
City water crews must find more than 10,000 of those valves over the next few months, from just past Eastall Way off of Thane Road to Cohen Drive and Tea Harbor. Crabtree says the plan was to start early this morning for what he calls exercising the valves.
With all the sediment and the sanding and whatnot going on in the roads, they fill up. They get pretty full of, you know, real silty, fine sand materials, and they get packed in there really tight.
Once that is done, sometime in June, all of Juneau's water lines will be flushed. Crabtree calls it preventative maintenance. And an Alaska sea otter pup has a new home at the Vancouver Aquarium. The pup was found stranded on a road in Homer last October. Only 8 weeks old at the time, the pup needed intensive around-the-clock care. A crew of volunteers were unable to locate the pup's mother, leading U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to authorize a rescue. Dr. Tara Reamer-Jones is president of the Alaska Sea Life Center, where the pup was rehabilitated.
We had this otter at the center for almost 6 months. During part of this time, staff from the Vancouver Aquarium were invited up to help us care for this otter. And so for most of the winter, we had a couple staff members from the Vancouver Aquarium in Seward helping us with round-the-clock care. So for 6 months, we had someone 24/7 with this otter, making sure that it was eating properly and had everything that it needed.
Jones says that otters are not a common patient for the center. Some years there have been three or four, and other years there won't be any at all. Since sea otters can give birth year-round, pups can strand at any time.
With some other animals that we respond to, like harbor seals, we tend to get 10 or 12 every summer that generally come in late May or early June. And those are a little more like clockwork. But most of the other animals that we respond to is a little more random, and we just never know what we're going to get until we get the phone call.
The female otter was transferred to the Vancouver Aquarium last Friday, where she now lives with a couple of other Sea Life Center alums, Tanu and Elfin. The Vancouver Aquarium is having a Twitter contest for naming the new pup by choosing one of three names chosen by the Ocean Sciences Club. The club, made up of middle school students from Seward, picked Susitna, Katmai, and Glacier as some of the options, and people can vote on a name by following the aquarium on Twitter and tweeting their vote using the hashtag OtterLove. Tweet your vote by March 31st to be counted, and you can go to our website at ktoo.org to see some pictures and a video of the cute and fuzzy. Weather forecast for the capital city calls for some cloudy skies and possibility of some rain and snow by Friday. Temperatures today between 27 and 38 degrees with some relatively light winds for today, and also some rain expected for most of this weekend. Currently 32 degrees at the Juneau Airport, and Alaska Airlines says flights are running on schedule this morning. I'm Matt Miller, and that's a look at news and weather for this half hour. Good morning. I'm Matt Miller with this news update. A representative for ExxonMobil Corporation says a proposed overhaul of Alaska's oil tax structure would make Alaska more competitive for investment dollars. But Dan Seckers says the question is whether it makes Alaska attractive. Seckers testified before the House Resources Committee last night. He says Senate Bill 21 is a big improvement over Alaska's existing tax structure. The bill would raise the base tax rate from the current 25% to 35% and provide a $5 credit for each taxable barrel of oil produced, and also provide a tax break for new oil. The State House has passed a bill that would legalize certain types of knives. Representative Mark Newman's bill would allow for knives to be regulated in the same way as firearms. The bill passed on a unanimous vote yesterday, but notice of reconsideration was issued, meaning the measure could be voted on again today before going to the Senate. Newman said the practical effect of the bill would be to deregulate one-handed hunting and utility knives. U.S. Senator Mark Begich will conduct a hearing today on the 2012 Arctic offshore petroleum drilling season and maritime safety in the region. The Alaska Democrat is chairman of the Senate Subcommittee on Oceans, Atmosphere, Fisheries, and the Coast Guard. The hearing starts this morning at the University of Alaska Anchorage. The Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium, or SEARCH, is closing down its residential drug and alcohol treatment program. The closure of the Bill Brady Healing Center was announced yesterday, and it comes after massive reductions in federal funding known as sequestration. KCAW's Ed Ronco has more on the story from Sitka.
The Bill Brady Healing Center has existed in its current form since 1996, About 50 patients graduate from the 40-day program every year.
I know that April 30th is our last day.
Dave Johnson has been a residential manager at the Healing Center for about 4.5 years. When he clocked out at 2 on Monday afternoon, he was told to return at 4 for a mandatory meeting. That is when search officials broke the news that the center would close in about a month's time.
When it was first told to us, I was bitter, and I was angry. And I was thinking of, I was thinking negatively.
The last 24 hours, he says, have included a lot of reflection.
Last night, I couldn't sleep. And, you know, today I woke up and I feel a lot better. There's two ways to look at it. You can look at it as a total negative, but there's another way to look at it as another door is going to open.
Johnson is one of about 22 people who work at the Bill Brady Healing Center. In a statement released Wednesday, Search says some of them will be reassigned, others will be furloughed, a temporary unpaid leave, basically, and others will be let go completely. The closure is estimated to save Search about $1.5 million every year. The money will chip away at a funding cut of more than $3.5 million imposed by sequestration, the name given to cuts that automatically kicked in on March 1st when Congress failed to agree on a federal budget. Search CEO Charles Clement says the organization has dealt with short-term funding problems before, but he calls sequestration the new normal.
For all intents and purposes, it looks like the sequestration is going to be a permanent reality.
He says that means the organization can't just tighten its belt for 6 months and ride out the storm. At Bill Brady, Search is still figuring out who will lose their job outright and who will be moved to other parts of the organization. Clement says the dozen or so patients currently in the program will be seen through to completion in mid-April, and then the staff will have 2 weeks to wrap up loose ends and close the doors. This latest round of budget cuts comes after Search spent a year digging out from a $4 million deficit. Clement says the organization just got back to breaking even when sequestration hit. And with that new $3.5 million reduction from the federal government, the conversations continue among upper management on how to keep digging out of the hole.
They're a combination between these sort of, you know, financial conversations and these subjective value conversations. And, you know, we're sort of working it through the best we can, considering that, you know, we've essentially, you know, for all intents and purposes, we're being held over a barrel that we have to make these decisions in a very, very short time frame.
Back to Dave Johnson, the residential manager who is looking at losing his job.
My heart is telling me to go back to Angoon.
Johnson, who is now 32, grew up in the Admiralty Island community. He says for the last 5 years, he's been part of a team that helps complete strangers heal. And as he tries to heal from the sudden end to all of that, he says it's a good reason to be close to family.
I wouldn't say I'm at peace. I mean, you're seeing the cover. There's a lot. I'm really in shock, mainly. This was the best job I've ever had. I can honestly say that.
Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
Search is also suspending its training program for community health aides for the rest of the fiscal year. Community health aides provide first response in villages and smaller communities, often acting as medics by stabilizing patients before they're transported to larger facilities. In a statement issued yesterday, Search Chief Executive Charles Clement tried to dispel rumors that the program is going away entirely. He said community health aides who serve villages will continue to be part of Search's work. Clement said the staff who teach the training program were also healthcare providers themselves and that most will continue to have work at Search.
A large number of the employees are actually providers. So, they're teachers that are mid-level practitioners, and most of those providers will be seeing patients. They'll transition from being teachers to being providers again.
Search spokesman Michael Jenkins says about 4 people work in the community health aid training program. The program suspension is effective immediately and lasts until October 1st when Search begins a new fiscal year. Weather forecast for the capital city calls for some cloudy skies for most of the day today and a possibility of some rain and snow by Friday and just plain rain for most of this weekend. Temperatures today between 27 and 38 degrees and temperatures tomorrow between 29 and 39 degrees. And currently in the capital city at the airport, 37 degrees. I'm Matt Miller, and that's a look at news and weather for this half hour. Good morning. I'm Matt Miller with this news update. Juneau School Board last night adopted a nearly $78 million budget for the next fiscal year after trimming about $1.7 million, including 14 positions. The cuts are on top of $4.7 million in reductions last year. More than 100 positions have been cut in the last 3 years. School officials blame declining state revenue, which makes up the bulk of Alaska's school district budgets. The base student allocation, the amount that districts give to education, the amount the districts get for education for each student, has not changed in the last 3 years. The spending plan for Juneau schools is the work of the administration and a 17-member budget committee that represented each site council and the community at large. School board member Barbara Thurston chaired the committee.
We're all pretty frustrated by the way the budget's working out. Legislature refers to it as flat funding, but with inflation, flat funding really means cuts. And, you know, we've had cuts for a number of years now, and it hurts. These are people that have been with the school district for a long time. Or even if we can sort of absorb a lot of it through attrition, we're still, you know, losing programs, losing classes in the high schools, losing lots of services that our kids could benefit from.
The new budget attempts to keep a lid on class sizes by maintaining the current pupil-teacher ratio at current levels. School board member Andy Story says it also includes a new model for staffing nurses in the schools.
And the board went to a five nurse, five health assistant teams model where someone will be available in each school as much as possible each day. And then a nurse would also team with the health assistant to help with nursing needs and diagnosing health issues.
The new budget also continues the drug testing program, funding for the addition of teachers in case enrollment jumps before the next school year, and focuses resources on instruction to increase student achievement. Meanwhile, a crowd of teachers, students, and parents gathered in front of the Capitol steps yesterday to speak out for increased funding of education. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez has more on the story.
Students over oil! Students over oil!
For many at the rally, the questions of lowering taxes on oil companies and adjusting education funding were inextricably intertwined. Kindergarten teacher Kayla Harmon waved a sign saying as much.
It says, big breaks for big oil, how about a little more for little Alaskans?
The per student funding amount has been held at the same level for 3 years now. And across Alaska, school districts are considering budget cuts. Anchorage has a shortfall of $25 million, while Juneau is facing a nearly $2 million gap. Protesters like Harmon express concern that state funding for education will stay stagnant at the same time that the legislature is advancing an oil tax overhaul that would cut state revenue by $800 million next year.
We talk a lot about our natural resources, and we really have to think long and hard that kids are our future, and if we want these jobs to stay inside our state, we need to educate our students to be prepared for those jobs.
Nearly a dozen Democratic legislators spoke at the rally, passing a bullhorn between them. They've introduced a bill that would tie the base student allocation to inflation, but it hasn't been scheduled for a hearing. Since the beginning of the legislative session, Republicans in the majority have said they're working on their own fix for education funding, but have been tight-lipped on details. In Juneau, I'm Alexandra Gutierrez.
Juneau Douglas High School principal Ryan Alsup is resigning after 3 years on the job. Alsup will leave his post June 30th for what he says are personal reasons. He says it was a tough decision because he and his family enjoy living in the capital city. He does not yet have another job. Alsup moved to Juneau from Colorado in 2010 when Juneau Douglas High School was a larger school, but Thunder Mountain High School had just opened and budget cuts were looming then. Alsup says he's seen a number of major changes.
We're roughly 200 kids smaller, but we're also roughly 25 staff members smaller as a result of budget cuts and things like that. So the bulk of my job has been to maintain, you know, a high-quality education as we go through the budget reduction processes that we've done every year since I've been here.
Alsup says the opening of a second high school in town is difficult for the existing school, but he has seen staff morale improve in the last 3 years. School district officials will meet with faculty and parents soon to talk about the search for a new principal. Alsup hopes his replacement will be hired before he leaves, which will help ease the transition. In Alaska Science News this morning, the National Snow and Ice Data Center based in Colorado reported that Arctic sea ice reached its maximum extent for the winter on March 15th. KUAC's Emily Schwing has more on the story.
This year's wintertime sea ice extent was the sixth lowest since the National Snow and Ice Data Center started keeping satellite records in 1979. Walt Meyer is a research scientist at NSIDC.
In winter, we used to be about 16 million square kilometers, which is about double the lower 48 United States.
Based on this year's satellite records, Meyer says winter sea ice covered roughly 15.13 million square kilometers of the Arctic. That's roughly 10 times the size of the state of Alaska. It's also equivalent to more than 337 billion football fields.
We've kind of lost about a couple million square kilometers, million and a half or so, you know, on the order of about 10 to 15% of that. So that's kind of more maybe like the eastern seaboard of the United States in terms of the ice loss.
Meyer says recent Arctic sea ice records show a more pronounced seasonal cycle. Data show more of the wintertime sea ice that does exist is first-year ice. That means it develops each winter, but melts as temperatures warm in the spring and summer.
You know, it used to be, like, for example, from Barrow, Alaska, you would often see things open up and have some open water on the coastline for a while. But you could, you know, fairly easily take a boat out and maybe, you know, reach the ice edge. But nowadays, the ice edge is much farther northward and much farther away from the coast, and much more of the ocean is exposed during the summertime.
Sea ice acts as the Earth's air conditioner. When it reflects sunlight, it cools the planet.
But now when we lose the ice cover, the ocean is much darker comparatively to the ice. That absorbs all that solar energy that's coming in upwards of 24 hours a day, and that heats up the ocean. And that goes into, you know, when you're changing that, you're kind of, it's like your air conditioning is running out of coolant. It's not as efficient in terms of cooling the rest of the planet.
NSIDC has measured the 10 lowest winter sea ice extents in each of the last 10 years, with the lowest ever measured in 2011. At the beginning of April, scientists will release a detailed analysis of this year's winter sea ice conditions in the Arctic. In Fairbanks, I'm Emily Schwing.
Weather forecast for Huna, Gustavus, and Juneau today calls for mostly or partly cloudy skies for today and tonight. Temperatures between the high 20s to high 30s with some clouds tomorrow and a possibility of some snow late tomorrow with temperatures between the mid-20s and high 30s. Currently in the capital city, 31 degrees at the airport, 32 degrees, mostly cloudy skies in Gustavus, and 27 degrees, some scattered clouds in Huna this hour. I'm Matt Miller, and that's a look at news and weather for this half hour. Good morning. I'm Matt Miller with this news update. The state senator who requested a study of women's issues in Alaska says she's shocked and disturbed by the results. Anchorage Republican Liesl McGuire says she plans to introduce a bill this session to reform the Alaska Women's Commission, which disbanded in 1988. The study released yesterday shows Alaska women still earn less than men, were imprisoned at a higher rate during the last decade, and are committing suicide at a rate that's twice the national average. McGuire says she would like to see the commission members bring a variety of backgrounds to the table, including finance, domestic violence issues, education, homelessness, even a homemaker, to offer diverse opinions and solutions. The non-political group would then report back its findings and recommendations to the legislature. The latest version of the state operating budget includes language that would have the lieutenant governor stay at the Wickersham House. An amendment passed yesterday says the legislature wants the Department of Natural Resources to negotiate with the governor's office to establish the House of Wickersham State Historic Site as lodging for the lieutenant governor when he or she is in the Capitol. The department manages the home, which James Wickersham bought in 1928 and lived in until his death in 1939. Wickersham was a U.S. District Court judge and delegate to Congress. Among other amendments adopted by the Senate Finance Committee, amendments reflecting new bargaining agreements and restoring over $37,000 to the Best Beginnings Early Childhood Program. With all the talk about the same-sex marriage cases before the U.S. Supreme Court this week, U.S. Senator Mark Begich has become part of the buzz. The Alaska Democrat says same-sex couples should be able to marry and should have the same rights, privileges, and responsibilities as any other married couple. The statement isn't new, but it's made a buzz in some circles, and the BuzzFeed Politics website thought it had a scoop. The senator's comment is similar to a remark made last year to the Human Rights Campaign, an advocacy and lobbying organization for the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender community. Neither statement was made in a formal news release from the senator's office. You can find links on our website at ktoo.org. Yesterday's snow has already delayed CBJ's water valve cleanup, according to Water Utility Superintendent Dave Crabtree.
A little bit of ice on the road, that doesn't help us find the valve boxes very easily.
City water crews must find more than 10,000 of those valves over the next few months, from just past East Stallway off of Thane Road to Cohen Drive and Tea Harbor. Crabtree says the plan was to start early this morning for what he calls exercising the valves. Once that is done, sometime in June, all of Juneau's water lines will be flushed, and Crabtree calls it preventative maintenance. Just a reminder that the tsunami warning that you may hear on the radio or see on television this morning is just a test. Today is the 49th anniversary of the Good Friday earthquake that struck Alaska and caused a tsunami that caused damage in communities like Kodiak and Valdez. And what better time to hold Tsunami Preparedness Week to get ready and streamline communications for the next one? That emergency communications test is set for between 9:45 and 10:15 throughout most of coastal Alaska this morning, and many warning sirens should go off in Alaska communities vulnerable to tsunamis. And earlier this week, we chatted with Paul Whitmore of the West Coast and Alaska Tsunami Warning Center in Palmer about how they issue a warning. If an earthquake meets certain criteria, he says they'll issue a warning immediately and then later refine modeling for any waves that might end up hitting some coastlines. And he says they monitor in real time around the clock about 600 stations around the world for possible seismic activity.
The first indications that a big event has happened is through our computer system. We're monitoring all of those channels, and whenever a larger than normal signal occurs, it'll trigger an alarm, and our scientists will come up to their stations and do a quick evaluation of the event. And just based on the earthquake information, they'll make a decision as to whether or not to issue a warning. And that decision's based on the location, the magnitude, the depth of the earthquake. And we base those initial warnings just on the earthquake information, because by the time we receive confirmation that a tsunami really has been generated, it's usually too late for the nearest people if we were to issue a warning at that point. So we issue the warning just based on earthquake information. And then we monitor sea level, and we'll monitor two types of sea level information. We have gauges along the coast, up and down the coast of Alaska, and really all of North America. And there's also these deep ocean pressure sensors that are out in deep water, and they both pick up tsunamis as they either impact the coast or propagate through deep water. But it takes anywhere from 15 minutes to an hour after an earthquake's occurred to pick up the tsunami on those recording devices. Once we do, we'll if we see no tsunami and we'd have an alert out, we'll cancel the alert right away. If we do see a tsunami, then we'll feed the information into our tsunami forecast models to make an estimate of how big the wave will be outside of the source zone.
That's Paul Whitmore of the West Coast and Alaska Tsunami Warning Center. And for Alaska, for any tsunami warnings in our particular area, he says some of the criteria for potential tsunami warnings include a 7.0 magnitude earthquake near shore or offshore with the quake located not too deep. And once again, that communications test is planned for between 9:45 and 10:15 this morning, and you may be able to hear it on K2 and other stations in the Juneau area. Weather forecast for the capital city calls for some cloudy skies for most of the day today. Temperatures between 27 and 38 degrees with some relatively light winds for most of the day. And then a chance of rain and snow by at least Friday, with rain and snow likely for most of this weekend. Temperatures in the 30s and low 40s. Currently in the capital city, 40 degrees downtown Juneau. I'm Matt Miller, and that's a look at news and weather for this half hour.